wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zef.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. Before we even start, I took some photos right now. The new basement studio setup is now extremely different than usual. Normally, my partner and I... Normally, my partner and I sit across from each other on a nice small table surrounded by our equipment. But due to the oncoming plague of death, we have set up some preventative measures to ensure that if one of us is infected... Well, the other ones will still be alive to run the Atlantic Voice.
Okay. Creating some artificial social distance since we're still the same distance from each other.
So it looks to me like you have erected basically a coffee table on top of our table and covered it with a towel. So all I can see is the top of your head.
Right. I was trying to get – I was pretty lucky. Couldn't find some things around the house that would quite work so that we could see each other and know each other doing, but we can't see each other's mouths. Well, and hopefully – because the microphones are below this level, any sort of talking we're not – we're not dispersing on an aerosolized basis across the across.
Well, I'm now wearing a painter's mask.
You're wearing it upside down, however.
Oh, but, I am? Yeah. And I don't know how this sounds, but already my voice is muffled and this would not be the way to do the show. No. I look like some deranged tourist who still decided to go out and look at things. But then again, I don't think a painter's mask is probably sound medical advice.
Well, if it's just painters, it's, you know, some of the hardware store ones are N95, which is the ones that people are aiming to get anyway. Does it say N95 on it? Probably not. That looks like it's just paper.
Yeah, no. I mean, frankly, I'm probably better off just wearing like a gorilla mask or something.
The real trouble, if it's any good, if it's strong enough, it's gross inside. I have some masks from doing like woodwork and things, and they even have a valve because they're so obstructive. Like the filters, make a lot of noise over there.
It's the painter's mask because I bought a painter's mask for you. I didn't realize you were going to erect this barrier.
Wait, you managed to buy those masks? Recently?
No, about 6 months ago, because I was actually going to do some painting.
Okay.
I didn't have some sort of deranged foresight of the oncoming. Although we are going to get to people who have deranged the foresight of the apocalypse. Because in light of all the coronavirus stuff, we decided we're not going to talk coronavirus because there's a good chance that next show we might be under quarantine, and then we can talk about life under quarantine then.
We could have done this virtually. I guess we could have just done it on Skype.
Let's do it on Skype when we are confined to our houses. But instead, we thought to give you all a bit of a break from the impending doom and gloom, we decided to do an end of the world in pop culture show. And as always, is one of our strengths is talking about films and talking about music. We've created some lists of end-of-the-world movies and end-of-the-world songs, and we're just going to dive in and talk about them, and maybe...
That's one of our strengths. One of our weaknesses is under-preparation, and I feel this is definitely an under-prepared version of this show.
But
we do have a number of clips available, but we don't really have any organized approach to this, so we're going to see how it goes.
So I think with that in mind, we're going to be very lazy, and we're just going to critique the quality of the art rather than some sort of in-depth analysis of the art. And what I mean by that is we might throw out some end-of-the-world movies, and I might actually say, that's a really good one, or I might say, that one's nonsense. Here was the most interesting thing. When we threw this idea around, you know, for a bit of a laugh and a bit of a jaunt, what I found most interesting was that I was suddenly flooded with, is that an end-of-the-world movie? Does that count as an apocalyptic movie? And for the music, you sent me articles that had listed apocalyptic songs.
Yeah, it was a Diffuser article.
Yeah, and they go like, there's like 50 songs. And I'm like, wow, I could only think of four off the top of my head.
I didn't send you the link, but when you go to, if you go to these end of the world movies on Wikipedia, then it shows a link to these being apocalyptic or end of the world movies. And they actually have them broken out by decades starting in like the 40s.
Yes.
And it's... just like the virus, it's exponentially each decade there is like twice as much or three times as many movies, and they cover a wider and wider range. So maybe we should mention a couple of categories that we're not going to talk about.
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so for one, we don't want to do any virus movies, or illness type movies, because
every other pop culture podcast is doing that at the
like,
moment.
I saw The Ringer re-released its Contagion.
I listened to it. No, they redid it. They redid it this week. It was Bill Simmons and Chris Ryan talked about it as a film. And it was actually quite an entertaining listen.
Uh-huh. I haven't listened to those in a while. I just, you know.
No, so it wasn't. They just talked about it as a film and how it was. They drew from it what they wanted to draw from it that was prescient rather than. They normally, when they do these rewatchables, they sort of grade the movie and the performances mm-hmm. and sort of say, is this a career high for so and so? You know, was this as good as it gets for Spielberg or whatever it may be? But they said at the start, we're not going to do that with this one. We're just going to talk about the movie and how, strangely enough, it was either prescient or accurate.
Reading reviews of it, it did say, like, this is the closest to the mark of what people would think now. And I think it's just because it's the most recent and they actually did it based on some.
And to be fair, I never watched the other one with Dustin Hoffman because I wasn't going to watch a disease movie with Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. So.
And then you have World War Z, the Brad Pitt movie, which was based on a book that was well known and the movie didn't do very well.
No, it didn't.
And it was a virus, but it was also sort of a zombie.
It's really a zombie movie.
Because it's about people running around and going crazy, but it is about this virus spreading through things. And we're going to mention one that's like that too, but we'll talk about it a little later. Actually, I guess we could just go into that.
One that we
have on the category where we do think it sort of fits is 28 Days Later.
It does fit. And like I'm saying to people now, we should be glad that the coronavirus doesn't turn us into a zombie. Because at that moment, you've got a double problem. You actually got a triple problem. You're either going to get sick and die, you're going to get attacked by zombies and die, or you're going to turn into a zombie. So it's like a triple threat issue. And that was the trouble with 28 Days Later.
28 Days Later, and then the sequel is 28 weeks later or something, because it's about to come. But the thing about it that's interesting is, although it behaves like a zombie movie,
it's supposed
to be an illness movie, and this rage virus, because you remember like when they... Ultimately, these things start starving. Like, it's not like something dies and comes back from the dead kind of thing. And
because this is a pop culture show, I feel that that is one of the most realistic depictions of diseases turning you into a zombie-like creature. I find a lot of the other zombie movies take all kinds of leaps and really don't work at any kind of logical level. That's my position.
You mean like as a sci-fi?
What? No, it's like fact. Like the other zombie movies are not very realistic. My point, and I'm not being facetious when I say this, 28 Days Later feels, to your point, it feels like a realistic sort of plague, you know, sort of Armageddon type scenario. Whereas, you know,
the TV show
and some of those others. There's the one that's the remake where Ving Rhames is a security guard at the shopping mall and they're defending the shopping mall from zombies. I'm like,
Well, all those ones where you die and you come back, it's like, pretty sure that's not the way.
It's just not very realistic.
That's what I mean. It's not really sci-fi.
They're not realistic zombie movies.
Well, that's why I said science fiction. The notion of a science fiction is that there is some underpinning of like, this
science
could
fact.
Be.
Yes, yeah, okay. You
know. So those fit. But we'll just knock that one off the list right away. Even though World War Z was similar to that, except that World War Z seemed goofier.
There is something very sort of, because I think the great thing about 28 Days Later is it uses that hook of that almost sort of Twilight Zone. The lead character, Cillian Murphy, wakes up and he's been in hospital for a coma. He comes out of his coma 28 days later, and the whole it's really about living in a deserted society, and that's what gives
what
the
was,
movie.
And what,
its
was the, what was the what was the Will Smith one that was like that too with the
I Am Legend, which is really a remake of The Omega Man with Charlton Heston, which I think in itself is based on either a Ray Bradbury novel about like The Last Man Alive or something.
So that was one category we're knocking off as we proceed to talk about them. The other category was aliens.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of end of the worlds around space invaders and War of the Worlds and
Independence Day is the most famous variant of that, the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds. And I want to say, I'm going to shout out one movie because it pales in comparison to these other movies because it doesn't have the scope. Stars Aaron Eckhart, and it's called Battle L.A. And I don't know if it was based off a video game or something, but it's basically about a bunch of Marines or an Army unit trying to get across LA while LA is under alien invasion.
Slightly longer first word.
Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez is in it, a couple of other people. And while it pales in comparison, because it's not really about aliens just happen to be the villain, but I find it a very entertaining close quarters war movie, which is what it is. A war movie just happens to be against alien invaders, but it gets hammered because it doesn't have the scale and scope. Because people go in thinking this is going to be an alien fighting movie, but it's actually not. It's a bunch of army dudes trying to survive. Yeah, it's
like one platoon in this scenario.
And it's actually quite quick. It's like an hour and 35 minutes. Aaron Eckhart, who is a much underrated movie star, I think it's a great little film. Whenever it comes on TV, I watch it. There's a great scene where they're stuck in a bus and they're under siege from these aliens. It's machine guns going off. It's a good old fashioned war movie that happens to be about aliens.
Yeah, I thought about another virus one, by the way, that we're skipping over is 12 Monkeys, which was a good movie.
Never seen it. No, I've never seen 12 Monkeys. And that's Terry Gilliam, right? Yeah, I've never seen it.
Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah, Brad Pitt's in it, and I forget who the woman is.
And apparently it was a very good TV series when sci-fi...
I watched it, yeah.
It was good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, for a sci-fi TV series.
So anyway, we've sort of quickly given these movies sort of... not the chop is the wrong word, but we're glossing over them a little bit, because ultimately, in most of them, the world actually doesn't end, and... they're ultimately about, in the same way that a zombie movie is about zombies, alien movies are about alien invasions, which is a very different category to the end of the world.
Yeah, like I think of anything where, maybe natural cause is not the right word, but it's just, you know, calamity.
Apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Apocalyptic.
That's what we're going to deal with.
And I'm sorry, Independence Day is not apocalyptic. Yes. And frankly, if you want an alien invasion movie, the best one is District 9. Which combines alien invasion and people getting sick.
Yeah, but it's not an end-of-the-world movie because they're just...
No, but that's what I'm saying. If we're going to go down the rabbit hole of alien invasion movies, then District 9 is your best one. Category over.
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
maybe the next area to go to, though, to actually talk about it is not aliens, but also space-related, which is... things that fly through the sky and are going to blow up the Earth.
Okay.
Did you give me a clip for...
I sent you a clip for Deep Impact, which was in the famous 1998 battle of meteor movies. Deep Impact got cratered by Armageddon, because Armageddon ultimately is...
budget. Since we've spent more money than we can hide. The budget comes out in 2 weeks. I don't suppose I could convince you to sit on this for 2 weeks.
He's playing the president.
Morgan Freeman, president, yeah. You know you're in trouble when Morgan Freeman's your president.
And I can't appeal to your sense of what's in the nation's best interest.
Well, I always thought the truth was in the nation's best interest.
You want to hold it? What if we go public in 48 hours? Now that's doable, isn't it?
That would be very difficult, Mr. President.
Morgan. If she knows, how long can it be before CNN or the Post breaks the story?
There you go.
Now, this was never going to be a secret as long as...
So, obviously, and I shouted it out, I think 1998, I think it came out, but so did Armageddon.
Yeah, and Armageddon, for people who don't know, is the one with Ben Affleck.
Bruce Willis. Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi and...
Ian Duncan, Gordon, the big, huge, what's his name?
Yeah.
African American guy who's in the Green Mile.
I don't remember in Deep Impact what they don't like go out there to it because Armageddon.
So Armageddon is basically about the astronauts.
They send a bunch of miners. Yeah. They quickly train them how to be astronauts.
Michael Bay movie.
By miners, I mean not like people under age 18, but people who like do mining. And they're going to go out and land on the asteroid and drill into it and blow it up.
Blow it up with a nuclear bomb. But Deep Impact, as you just mentioned, slightly secondary cast. But I'm going to say this, under normal circumstances, Armageddon pounded Deep Impact at the box office. Armageddon, you go to anyone and go, which one of these is better? Everyone's going to go, I'm watching Armageddon. But if our rule is which movies depict the end of the world in a more realistic sense, it actually is Deep Impact, which has, and I want to shout out, we have a clip from it. One of the So in trolling around Friend of the World movies, I ran across a late 1950s movie in that sort of 1950s sci-fi explosion of the very original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Forbidden Planet. But it's called When Worlds Collide, where another planet has been discovered that is on a collision course with Earth, so the people on Earth have to build a space rocket so that the brightest and the best can escape to the other planet that's crashing into Earth. So
wait, why do you want to escape to the planet that's going to crash into Earth?
Well, because Earth's going to be blown up.
But that planet's not?
Well, I think the plot, and I've never seen it all the way through, I've only ever watched the first hour. They build a rocket, they get on the rocket takes off, the other planet smashes into Earth and blows it up, and then they land on the new planet and repopulate it.
Please.
Oh, thank you, dear.
1951.
$951.
I'll take care of it.
But this is supposed to be
in black, in color.
Yeah,
some pretty decent model effects, special effects for
a lot of people smoking.
Yeah, everyone wearing a tie.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, the movie Melancholia with...
Kirsten Dunst.
Which
I've never seen. Yeah.
In the anti-room,
but it's not really so much a sci-fi as it's like a
psychological drama.
We have no secrets from each other. Bronson been at this study a long time?
2 years. But I first heard from him 10 days ago. He wanted me to check his findings.
That's a very gripping clip, isn't it?
Well, so turn that down a little bit. I'm now going to say that one of the reasons... If you shut your eyes... We've just played a scene from Deep Impact, and we've now played a scene from a 1951 Earth-ending movie. They both play it straight. They're both talking about it on a very human level, whereas Armageddon is all about dudes blowing stuff up. I mean, Armageddon could be a cop movie in space, for crying out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. This is going to be the one time when I'm going to sit here and tell you that Deep Impact is a better movie than Armageddon, because it more accurately depicts an Earth-ending event. Now, and this is where, and of course, this show all of a sudden now feels like some deranged free-form stream of consciousness. But you're talking about, space and whatever. Well, here's the interesting thing: we talked in the group beforehand about Interstellar. Interstellar is a movie about Earth sort of collapsing in on itself under the attack of corn, apparently.
It's environmental issues. And
before I let you cede the microphone to you, Interstellar is about people trying to escape Earth to live somewhere else, which is the plot of When Worlds Collide, which is 70 years ago.
Well, I think what's interesting about Interstellar compared to these others is it's not a short-term calamity. It's like just squeezing the life out of Earth, and people are, eventually they know we're not going to make it with the way the condition the Earth is in
right now.
But it's a very long range thing. You know, they're talking about like the people who are there have only lived in this starving version of Earth, and all the crops aren't growing and things like that. But since you keep saying the word Armageddon, I'm just going to throw something else in there.
Sure, do it.
I think it still has the world's collide going on behind it, which is kind of a surreal effect.
A lot of people won't get no supper tonight.
So the one weird thing about the songs, like none of them are very overtly like the world is ending. Like I don't
know
if this is technically a world is ending kind of thing. It's just called Armageddon time.
Well, here's the interesting thing about The Clash and a whole load of bands of that era. I'm going to shout out some other British bands like The Jam and The Damned. They all took turns doing sort of songs depicting either nuclear war, post-nuclear war, or the end of the world, because they all came out of England during the late 70s and early 80s when there was this notion that Thatcher and Reagan are out of control and are going to blow the place up versus the Russians type thing. And CND as a political force was very strong and what have you. So, of course, you know, any rock, punk, new wave band with a sense of social consciousness was going to do a song that depicted some sort of end of the world type scenario. Like, for example, I didn't add it to the list. You know, the Jam, which was a British band that we've talked about before on this show, that they are my band of my childhood. They did a great song called "A Bomb in Wardour Street."
You picked a different class song, so go ahead and go in there.
And I'm going to compare the two, and I'm going to say why. But this is the Clash we're listening to now, obviously. So, the wheat tastes good here. I think I always think that's what it says, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the other thing.
And then, of course, the famous line, "London is, and I live by the river." So, I'm gonna now give a shout out why. So, the Clash did a song called "Armageddon," but this is a better end of the world song. The only weakness with "London Calling" is when you listen to it, it would appear that the world is ending in about four different ways: either nuclear winter, ice age, and of course, this was another great. If you grew up in England, in London specifically, in the 70s and the early 80s, one of your paranoid fears was the Thames was going to flood and everyone was going to die. And that's why there's that great line there, "London is drowning and I live by the river." Because we all worried that if we had too much rain, the Thames would burst its banks and millions of people would die down in the London Underground. And then, of course, we spent a gazillion dollars actually building what's called the Thames Barrier, which goes across the Thames out of London. And if the Thames gets too high, it's actually sort of an artificial dam that would stop the Thames rising in central London. So I don't know the lyrics to the Clash's "Armageddon." I know the lyrics to the Clash's "London Calling." So I'm going to say that that is the better end of the world.
Fair enough. Good enough. All right. Well, while we're in England, we could make a mention of "Children of Men," which is another different type of end of the world.
Although, but is it the end of
the world? Well, so like there ends up with some hope at the end, but we don't know. So the premise for that, who people don't know.
It's so we're good. Clive
Owen's the main star. It's got, but the idea is that children are not being born anymore.
Right.
And like the youngest child on earth is like a 20-something-year-old and actually in one part of it is killed. Like, he's not a character in the movie, but like, you know, there's a news report about how he was killed in a fight and, you know, everybody is despondent and what would happen to society if it didn't feel like it was anybody to pass it on to? You're just going to live out your days. And then along the way, not to ruin anything, but somebody has a baby and it's all about like saving this, you know, people want to use it for political purposes and moving there. It's a refugee. And so it's another one like Interstellar. It feels like it's squeezing the earth off. Of course, in theory, it's supposed to make you feel good. I do kind of wonder if there was one baby born, if that's really going to change things or you really need some more.
Here's an interesting thing. And again, so when I'd thrown this idea I'd originally said, can we try and select the greatest movie about the end of the world? And while we're not really going to do that because we have so many, we just decided we were going to roll through tangents and shout out movies and it was too much work to bother creating, is this one better than that one? But I'll say this about Children of Men. While it's not about the end of the world, and that movie's now 13 years old, dystopian future society. It definitely looks like what the world is going to look like if the end of the world is coming. Everything is slightly desperate, but everyone's still trying to stick to their everyday lives of riding a bus and going to the pub. But there is this notion of we're all going to die. Society's sort of come apart at the seams. But unlike, say, 28 Days Later, where everyone is deserted and basically are now acting like animals to an extent, Children of Men is... It does a pretty good job of sort of guessing. This is what society doesn't end spectacularly. It just slowly comes apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And it's a great film. It's unbelievably well shot.
Yeah.
Great performances from everyone who's in it, from Clive Owen to Michael Caine to Julianne Moore to, I always pronounce his name wrong, the great British African-American actor who was in 12 Years a Slave.
Okafor.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great film.
Yeah.
And it works on so many different levels. You know, it is slightly sci-fi, but it is this wonderful commentary, again, about how we are. Right. But it's not technically about the end of the world. So by our standard of, is this the greatest end of the world movie?
It's like the autumn of the world. May not be the end, but it's on the way to the end.
But a great 2 hours in the cinema. Really, a terrific film.
I highly recommend.
Yeah. Alfonso Cuarón, I think.
Does Waterworld count as an end of the world movie? This one is not ending. You know, they're just all floating around. I was just thinking in terms of good movies versus bad movies.
So here's the interesting thing. When you threw that
Waterworld,
in there.
Waterworld, of course, being Kevin Costner with the...
And a Dennis Hopper.
Yeah.
And Jeannie Triplehorn, who then
it's like a bad version of Mad Max on the ocean.
Well, that was the thing. When I thought about it, I thought, well, technically Waterworld is an end of the world movie, but it is so far behind The Road Warrior in terms of its quality that I'm like, no, we're not talking about it, because I hadn't originally thought we'd talk about The Road Warrior. But The Road Warrior, let me say this, that's a great film. You watch it now. Yeah. And again,
talking about the second, like the Mad Max is the original, and that's like a much more smaller scale movie. And Road Warrior is like,
and there's no Tina Turner. The only person you halfway recognize is a very young Mel Gibson, and yet it's brilliant enough that they rebooted it 25 years later with Tom Hardy playing Max.
Yeah,
that's how good The Road Warrior is. It's exciting, but it is. It's basically obviously set in Australia. Society is completely collapsed. People are desperately trying to get to the coast because that's the only place where they think they're going to survive. Yes, that's an apocalyptic. That's a great end of the world movie. I am now stuck.
Apocalyptic.
Yeah, this is the wrong day. I'm going to just end saying that's a great eucalyptic movie.
it's mentholates and you know.
Do we count? I guess we do count Interstellar. And Interstellar, because Interstellar in a strange way is a variant of
When Worlds Collide. And they actually leave, and so it's the end of the world. It's not an end of people. I guess that's what's a little bit different.
Yeah, and Interstellar does sort of paint quite a hopeful future, doesn't it? That we're all living in these big space stations and it looks great. Yeah. And
reasonably hopeful.
Yeah,
it reasonably hopeful. It seems like it was pretty tough getting
there. Well, let's face it. Interstellar is a hopeful version of... What was the one we talked about, District 9? What's the one that movie maker did next with Matt Damon and Jodie Foster?
Oh, yes.
Elysium?
Yeah.
Where everyone is trying to get from a decaying Earth up to the super nice space stations.
That's definitely a sadder version.
You can do another movie or you can do some music?
Well,
so far, out of what we've played so far, and we've only played two songs, The Clash's London Calling is the ultimate eucalyptic movie. So, there's going to be some challenges. What are you going to roll to next? Play something.
I'm struggling with the computer here.
Oh, come on now.
Well, I mean.
Just hit play. Give the listener something.
I have to scroll through this whole list to get there. What, you don't have anything else to talk about?
Well, no. I mean, because we were going to sort of roll from place to place on this thing. It's got dead air, although I can cut that out.
That's true, you can.
Yeah.
Of course, this is probably going to pre-roll an ad on me, so.
It's not playing.
No, it's not. Maybe it's the end of the internet.
Oh.
I tell you what, you know, everybody's be working from home. It's going to be a serious test on the internet back.
Well, I was forced to go to my local cable provider and upgrade my box to make sure we had enough power.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and aeroplanes.
I don't know if it's too early to play this, but...
Nah, play it. What the hell? We're going to play them all. I think with the music, we're going to have a king at a castle type one.
As they say, this is the R.E.M. song, End of the World as We Know It.
Yep. Great song.
We must have talked about it before.
No, we haven't. We've talked about The Clash, but we haven't talked about it since.
Because there's a lyric in here that people speculate about UVA.
Oh, really? Well, I'm not going to listen to the whole song again, then. It's worth that dead air to get to this, though, isn't it? Great song. And everyone sing it now. We know it. It's the... Great song.
So the you know, when people talk about that, they say it's kind of related to Subterranean Homesick Blues by Bob Dylan, which has got a video back from the day where it's like it's all these like parade of lyrics. There's no, it's not a, well, this does have a chorus, but it's like
Subterranean Homesick Blues. And what was the NXS song? Or did the NXS song rip off the NXS song ripped off the Subterranean Blues video?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right.
And that was like, that was more just like individual words kind of thing. But in any event, this is, you know, like the parade of stuff. Now, what about the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire? That's kind of the same thing where you just parade that, but it's not nearly
But it's not really about the end of the world, is it? It's just Billy Joel banging on about.
I'm sure this is
about
the end of the world.
But yeah, but it's called It's the End of the World as we know it. It's a great song.
Well, there's a lyric in there that sounds, for the UVA people, back just before I started school, they started stamping out like the party scene a little bit.
Okay.
And there's a lyric that, who knows if this is really what it is. It means, overflow. No, say wait. It's something about no beer, cavalier, renegade, steer clear, tournament flat. So like, and it's supposed to be like when they ended these big parties at UVA.
Okay.
And it's a beginning of it is Watch O'Neill crush, or at least that's what it sounds like. And
okay.
The president of university was Bob O'Neill at the time.
Oh, I guess it is a UVA lyric. Yeah, and so again, I mean, they are from Athens, Georgia, right? REM are one of those many bands, which is a college town.
Yeah,
so college culture back then in the 80s. Everyone knew everyone else's business. It's a great song. I'm going to give you two reasons why it is not the best end of the world song, despite its title. You can make a case that London Calling to Me right now sits in the chair.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this because it's like my youth and whatever. I think while REM's song is a great song, I don't think it's their best song. Whereas I think The Clash's London Calling is definitely in a tie for The Clash's best song. Here's the other reason. It's, if I want the end of the world to be a happy time, I'm playing that. But when it comes to Eucalyptic Disaster, that song's too happy. It's too happy.
Well, yeah.
What was the song, the one where the video is Michael Stipe walking?
Everybody Hurts.
Everybody Hurts. Yeah. That's far more depressing.
Yeah.
Which is what the end of the world is supposed to be. So unfortunately, I'm going to make a case that London Calling still sits in the chair, because while that's a great end of the world, that's the sort of song. I was at a party last week with a band, some stupid garage band playing away, and they played that and everyone's dancing and singing the words, and that's great. But the end of the world isn't going to be that entertaining.
Well, we're going to test this one out to see if it works here. I need to let it get a little further in, though. So it's on the list, and I just completely lucked out by hitting the right lyrics. I don't know how I managed that. That doesn't usually work out that way. But the song was inspired by a book, which you said you've read, called On the Beach.
Yes.
And the premise of the book is I can't get this thing to stop.
So. Can I say something? Modern pop music is nowhere near depressing enough. The Clash made the top 10 in the British singles charts.
Yeah.
That is a pop hit, and that is a single 45 hit for Morrissey. REM's song was a hit in the day that the chart parade meant something. But I listen to the people in the charts now, they do not sing with the same pith.
First, do you listen to people in the charts?
No, because it's all too happy and it's junk.
Well, I don't know. The thing is, I don't think you'd really know.
Katy Perry is not depressing. Taylor Swift is not depressing.
What about all the Me Too-oriented songs? Those are depressing.
Yeah, that's true. I don't listen to enough pop music, I suppose.
No, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, you're not listening to the stuff that might be depressing. Anyway, so the movie there, which I wonder if I...
That is a dry throat mouth, I'm dying of the plague mouth. Cough.
Okay.
But you've got your screen up anyway,
yeah.
Which protects you, but don't seem to protect me.
Did you add a clip for this related movie? You did not.
No, but you did. So On the Beach is a book written by Neville Shute, who wrote a whole load of novels in the 50s, different sort of thrillers and what have you. Anyway, the book is about there's been a nuclear war, and the nuclear cloud is covering the Earth, and it's really a kind of a soap opera. Soap opera is a domestic drama about.
Well, the premise of the thing is apparently that there'd been this nuclear war, and all the fallout was really in the northern hemisphere.
Yes,
and
but it is spreading.
In Australia,
it's spreading to
and
the
so
south.
So they're just trying to kind of live out their days, and then, like in parts of it in the movie, at least, submarine goes out to California because they think
because to be fair, you know, one of the hooks of the book is while it is really about, you know, people's lives coming to an end, in that sort of like thriller style. Many of the lead characters are a submarine commander on a nuclear submarine that is actually crossing to the cities that are deserted and dying, and then able to get back to Australia. The movie Black and White stars Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner. But again, this isn't an action movie. The world's already ending. It's about how it affects people's lives. Very good read, and to be fair, a pretty decent
Fred
film.
Fred Astaire and Anthony Perkins.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of people. I think it was like 1962, 63.
So when you look up a trailer for this, it's not really a trailer as much as it is like a Hollywood reel talking about a big.
Robert Wagner heads the glittering array of celebrities on hand to see the picture the New York Times calls the best picture of the year. Herald Tribune also calls it best picture of the year.
Yes.
London Soviet Ambassador Malik arrives for on the beach premiere, and the London Standard proclaims.
And yet these Russians were probably responsible.
Rome, enthusiastic crowds hail Ava Gardner, and critics hail On the Beach as one of the most moving and touching pictures in years. Moscow.
So, like, you know, this stuff makes it, you know, like, in 59, it almost is a little early, and apparently it's set in 65. Like,
it is
early warning of, like, the nuclear stuff that became much more dramatic in the coming decade.
Yes.
In terms of people
fear. Yeah, it's kind of a forerunner.
It is kind of interesting. I kind of want to, apparently the whole thing's available on YouTube. You can watch it front to back, and I may watch it.
It's worth it. The book is great. It was directed by a guy, because I've got it up on my, I've got it up on my phone right now, directed by someone called Stanley Kramer, whose filmography, you know, he was the director of The Caine Mutiny. He was the director of The Defiant Ones, which is Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier's, the black convict and the white convict handcuffed together. So it was about racism. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And, of course, he also directed It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yes.
It's a real deal.
So
maybe worth watching. I mentioned, this is a tangent, but we got a Roku device. You know, I'm always after new. Now, Roku's not new. It's been around for a while, but I wanted to try out another device that would stream things in a more convenient fashion than some of these phone-based ones and stuff. So I grabbed a Roku, so maybe I'll watch the movie that way on YouTube.
It is worth watching the film. I'm going to say this. It's worth reading the book. Like I say, the book was written by Neville Shute, A Town Like Alice. He wrote, and he himself was an aviator. So he was a World War II pilot. So he'd done a couple of different books about flying and stuff like that. But the book is definitely worth a read. But to be fair, I watched the film as well. I mean, again, you know, if you watch it, you're sitting there watching a black and white movie from the late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, if you're not used to that sort of pacing, if that's not your thing, you're probably not going to enjoy it. And it's probably also, it's about the end of the world, but it's not. Do you know, and that's not a good way of putting it. It's about the end of the world, but it's about people reacting to knowing that the end is coming. So it's not all about, oh my gosh, this is how it happened, and is anyone going to save us? And it's not that type of film at all.
That's like Children of Men and all those.
It's like, yes, yeah. I was about to say, if you like Children of Men and you're in the mood to sort of let me watch a classic, then yeah, On the Beach is a pretty decent doubleheader.
Apropos of nothing, I'm just going to put on this song. Military oriented. I don't know if
it's looking.
Apparently, I had to jump in later because.
I don't want to spend the rest of my life looking at the barrel.
84, 85? It's one 82. Of those. Oh, it's a bit early.
Oh, no, wait. No, I got my wrong thing. 81.
Oh, it's 81? Yeah. My gosh. So again, no self-respecting new wave band. Yes. Could, if you're not doing a song about the end of the world, well, you know something? You're just the human leak.
Yeah. So anyway, this one, the premise of this one is a little bit more hopeful.
When Sting was still
diffuser talks about.
When Sting was still acceptable. Apparently Sting's on stage in DC right now.
Doing what? I mean, not right now, probably.
Oh, coming. He's in some play about shipbuilding or something. I don't know. Sting. Yeah, that's true, actually. Which probably, if there's going to be one, like, oh, what a shame. Sting getting cancelled. Well, there you go. You know, people, long-time listeners know how I feel about Sting. All right, so on the beach, good read, good, decent film. And, you know, we're not ranking the films in any which way. But when it comes to the end of the world, it's an adult look at what it's like to be around at the end of the world.
I think you want to talk about, it's another one.
Can we do something? Is it time to get to the natural disaster?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Let's get in there, because that's actually quite a big segment.
I'm not going to bother playing the first clip because it's useless.
Yeah.
Put this clip for 2012, which was the John Cusack movie. Right.
Directed by Roland Emmerich.
Yeah.
But why don't you play... So Roland Emmerich, who, along with producer and writer Dean Devlin, had done Independence Day, he's gone back. He also did the 1998 Godzilla. So this sort of notion of cataclysmic events, it's his wheelhouse, so to speak. So, but why don't you play the clip? He's now approached the end of the world twice, and frankly...
But this clip is pointless.
No, the 2012 clip is pointless, but why don't you play the Day After Tomorrow clip?
Oh, okay.
Because that's Roland Emmerich as well.
Oh, he did them both?
He did them both, and I want to make a comment about the fact that he's done both.
All right, well, so 2012 was with John Cusack, right?
Yeah, but we'll throw the two of them together. Okay. But play the clip from the Day After Tomorrow, which is, I think the clip I chose was Dennis Quaid briefing a room full of officials.
The superstorm will last 7 to 10 days. When it's over, ice and snow will cover the entire northern hemisphere. The ice and snow will reflect sunlight. The Earth's atmosphere will restabilize, but with an average temperature close to that of the last ice age.
What can we do about this?
Head as far south as possible.
That is not amusing, Professor.
Where do you suggest they go?
The farther south they go, the safer they'll be. Texas, parts of Florida that aren't flooded. Mexico would be best.
Mexico. Maybe you should stick to science and leave policy to us.
Well, we tried that approach. You didn't want to hear about the science when it could have made a difference.
What exactly are you proposing, Professor?
Evacuate everyone south of that line.
Anyway,
so there you go, Dennis Quaid.
The storm comes in this, and then they have a lot of post-storm stuff, like his kids and stuff.
Can I say this? As a scientist, Dennis Quaid doesn't know what he's talking about. Because why on earth he would make the statement that any parts of Florida that are not flooded? Florida doesn't have any hills. Florida's not that wide. It's got ocean on three sides. If any place in America is going to be flooded, it's probably Florida.
Well, yeah.
If you want to
That's
escape...
That's what he's saying. Most of it's going
to
be...
No, but he said, go south, go to Texas, go to Florida. Yeah. Anyway, this movie, Day After Tomorrow, is basically an eco-disaster where the climate has collapsed and we're all going to die. I think he did that in 2014, 2015. A lot of special effects, Dennis Quaid, Jake Gyllenhaal, all kinds of other people. Lots of shots of flooded New York and iced in, you know, L.A. It's interesting enough, Roland Emmerich, who directed it, he'd gone there and he'd done the film 2012 about 7 years before this one.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, 2012 is basically about all the signs of destruction that the world was going to end in 2012. And lo and behold, the world does end.
Because this was when people were talking about like
the Mayan calendar and everything. Yeah. And 2012 is basically about limo driver John Cusack trying to escape with his family to get on board one of these seven big arcs that the governments of the world have built. It sounds idiotic. It is slightly moronic. But in terms of...
What caused the thing in that one?
Well, the Mayan symbols were true.
Oh, it's just, yeah. So it's a little magic. It's off of our beaten path because this would be like a magic cause, not like a real cause.
So I'm now just going to compare these two movies. The Day After Tomorrow is a more realistic scenario of the end of the world. Yet, strangely enough, 2012 is a far more entertaining way to sit.
Well, 2012, I feel like the reason they made 2012 is because we have these great new computer things that we can do. Like, so the clip that I'm not playing was a teaser clip really early, like, so you didn't even know what the movie was, and it's just a picture of, like, a Buddhist monk ringing a bell as, like, water floods the Himalayas.
Floods the Himalayas, yeah. Here's the interesting thing. I haven't gone to the cinema to watch either one of these. I didn't go to the cinema to watch either one of these. I've not rented either one. Any of them. I've only ever watched them when they've been on basic cable. I remember first watching 2012 with John Cusack on a non-HD channel. And as much as I love John Cusack, I feel his career has peaked with Gross Point Blank, and everything he's done since has been a slow slide back to irrelevancy. It's not nice, but I love John Cusack, and I feel like he's still got so much more to give. When you watch 2012... That movie now is like 15 years old. The special effects are horrific. When you watch it on a non-HD TV, it's like watching almost a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. The special effects are awful. Now, when you watch The Day After Tomorrow by the same director, the special effects are better. But I'll be honest with you, 2012 is a far more exciting movie. John Cusack somehow manages to evade an earthquake, a flood, the volcano explode. It's like he runs the gamut of natural disasters that seem to befall his family as they attempt to escape on the Ark. And it's just a much more entertaining and goes down easier movie. And I do feel that I think in Deep Impact, haven't the government already been hollowing out mountains to save everyone from the cataclysmic media? Like, it was like, no, we've had this secret project. The whole notion of 2012 is the world's most powerful governments have been banding together for years to sort of create these massive arcs that are hidden in mountains so that when the world does flood, all the brightest and best are going to be able to escape and ride out the storm. It's weird. The two movies done by the same director, who's also done the Godzilla remake, who also did Independence Day. The dude's got an obsession with the end of the world, and yet so far he's never really done a great end of the world movie.
Not bad.
There is my rant over.
All right. Well, shoot, I'm not ready to do anything else. So you got anything else you want to talk about here?
No.
A couple of throwaways in there. What about, is Solaris or Sunshine your movie?
Sunshine. And it's funny, we mentioned earlier Cillian Murphy in 28 Days Later, which was directed by Danny Boyle, who won an Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire and was nominated for 127 Hours with James Franco. Well, of course, he also did what to me is an underrated science fiction movie. Done on a budget with Cillian Murphy, Chris Evans, Michelle Yeoh, a young Rose Byrne, and it's called Sunshine. And basically, the premise of that movie is astronauts have gone into space on a rocket that's basically a massive bomb because the sun is dying, and the only way to reignite it is to detonate a humongous atomic charge on it. And it's basically about all 8 or 9 scientists on a suicide mission to save the Earth. It's about the end of the world, but to be fair, should I spoiler? Yeah, I'm going to say spoiler because no one ever watches this movie, however much I tell people to watch it. The world doesn't end, although it doesn't work out so tightly for the crew. I love Cillian Murphy. I love Danny Boyle. It's got some great special effects. Chris Evans is in it as well. Just a really good Benedict Young. Or Benedict Wong, I think his name is, who you'd recognize from a whole lot of other movies. An underseen, underrated movie that I always tell people to watch. It's done on like a quarter of the budget of Interstellar and frankly a better movie. And I'm just making that comparison between two movies about people trying to save the Earth who are astronauts. It's a better movie. And again, I love Christopher Nolan. And while, Interstellar is this great visual experience, in terms of the story and the characters, Sunshine's a better movie. tell it, give it a go.
It's more concise, and I think it's good that way.
Tidier, yeah. Smaller in scope, more claustrophobic, a couple of really good set pieces, but a terrific cast. It's just a great film. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
A couple other movies I thought of that I don't think we have on our list. Is The Matrix count as an end of the world movie?
No.
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 Because the premise there is that, you know, like they darkened the atmosphere because all the computers worked on.
It counts as the end of the world movie in a way that Planet of the Apes would count. It's not kind of really about the end of the world.
How about Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
Ooh.
Again, machines arise.
I hadn't thought about that one. No, because they've made like 3 movies since. So clearly the world didn't end.
Well, it's because they just keep flashing back to the time before the world ended kind of thing.
Terminator 3, Terminator Genesis, Terminator with Christian Bale. The world didn't end.
The Road, Cormac McCarthy.
No, I've not. See, I've not. Is that, what's his name?
Viggo Mortensen.
Viggo Mortensen. I've never seen that.
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
It's not very happy. If you want, say, you know, you want depressing types of movies, just like just like your songs there, that'd be a good one for you. I never saw Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which was Steve Carell, and like it's obviously it's not so much about the
it's a rom-com.
Well, I don't know, rom Armageddon, rom apocalypse, yeah. I'm saving some more humorous stuff for the end. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I want to shout out what I think is actually a really, really good end of the world movie, which you said you hadn't seen, and I remember watching it. Is the clip there?
Yeah,
play the clip.
Yes, I don't know what movie we're talking about.
We're talking about the Michael Shannon, Brandy Chastain movie.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Why don't you play this clip?
Sure, yeah.
And this is before Brandy Chastain was super famous, and before Michael, this is basically Michael Shannon's first big role.
About this to me.
2011.
Don't you think you owe me that? Don't you think that you might respect me enough to at least consider what I'd have to say?
And I didn't want you worrying about it.
Well, I'm worried, Curtis. How are you paying for all that?
I think it may take us too long to get to the plot point.
Just let her talk, and then I'll talk about the film. Because I'm now going to go on the record and pick a winner.
How can you do that without talking to me?
So the premise, as I understand it, just to give people basic facts, he's building what he's calling a tornado shelter. Is it actually a tornado?
It is a tornado. So he's basically...
I'm doing it for us.
Michael Shannon plays...
You're right, I don't understand!
A blue-collar construction guy, and I can't remember why, but he's either been dreaming or seeing signs...
He has a vision, according to the Wikipedia thing.
Who thinks he's seen the end of the world. So... It's almost a riff on the Richard Dreyfuss character in Close Encounters, who throws everyone out of his house and builds the big devil's tower in his room. Remember that moment? Yeah. So Michael Shannon decides to take the family savings and build a tornado shelter in his backyard because he honestly believes the end of the world is coming. And it's all about the tension between him and his wife, because his wife just thinks he's going crazy. And that scene there is her teeing up at him because he's spending their money. And as she's saying, you didn't think you'd tell me about this? But the great thing about the film, and I don't want to give away the ending.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think you should tell anybody whether it turns out he's right or wrong. So.
No, but it is about, you spend most of the movie trying to figure out, the movie isn't about the end of the world, it's about how a guy would react to knowing or thinks he knows the end of the world. And if it's not something apparent, how do you react to that guy?
Yeah, well, so I'll tell you what. Here's the thing that actually this will be the most serious our podcast will get about this stuff. One of the, without talking about the corona stuff, what I think is fascinating is how many conversations people are having, and you don't know who's right. Like, it's like we're living in that movie. Like,
right.
So, like, you don't know if you're right or if the other person's right, and you can have some thought of it, but it's this notion of, listen, we aren't going to know until 10 years from now how serious it was or wasn't serious or something, like maybe less than 10 years. But right now, it's like we're all in the plot of this movie, and we don't know who's crazy and who's not crazy with their predictions, you know?
Take Shelter was, again, and Michael Shannon, if you're familiar with his work, he was General Zod in the Superman reboot. He's been in all kinds of different things. It was one of the first things I'd seen him in, and it's a small independent movie. Brandy Chastain is in it before she sort of became Hollywood Favorite of the Month, before she was in it in Estella or any of these films. It's a great movie, just great acting and a great character study of just ordinary people under duress and under self-made duress to a certain extent. Great film.
And as long as we're talking about the title there.
Yeah. Shelter. Co-opted by movie makers across the world. Scorsese seems to play it in every third movie, yeah.
It's funny, I'm not really like an overall Rolling Stones guy, but there's a couple of songs like this one.
Until I saw on the website, I just figured its title was Gimme Shelter and it was like symbolic of something else.
Yeah.
I didn't actually believe it was about the end of the world, and yet it appears on all kinds of Armageddon song lists.
Yeah.
And to be fair, if Take Shelter is the great, because I immediately thought of it because it's got Shelter in the title, right. Take Shelter. But I'm now going to tell you why it's not a great Armageddon song.
Too much fun?
No, because the first 25 seconds are brilliant. And then no one ever listens to the song after it. Everyone turns it down. That instrument, that lead-in is
it's a short song.
That lead-in is one of the most famous 25 seconds of modern music. And then invariably, I turn the song off after that. So how can it be a great Armageddon song when I'm more likely to listen all the way through Morrissey, The Clash, or even... the other one that we talked about.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to listen to the REM from start to finish. I'm not going to listen to Give Me Shelter from start to finish. I'm going to turn it down.
The REM
once Mick Jagger starts singing, I turn it down. Because it sounds just like Mick Jagger singing.
It's like
you're
fading it out in the movie.
Yes.
Well, as long as I think
Scorsese never plays it in its entirety. He turns it down too.
We've had enough serious things, so I figured we might be a little funnier.
That night was simple. 12 pubs, 12 pints. From the first post to the world's end. But that night, we never made it.
I saw the boys the other day. We're going to go back to Newton Haven.
Why?
5 guys, 12 pubs, 50 pints.
60 pints.
Steady on, you alky.
This is our chance to finally finish what we started. We are going to do the Golden Mile, and this
Simon
time
Pegg and
the whole gang. Nick, what's his name? Martin Freeman, Paddy Constantine—they're all in it.
What?
What the hell is this? Why are we even here?
We are here to get annihilated.
You come back and everything's sort of weird.
I suggest you get on your way.
It's not us that's changed. It's the town.
So, same people did Hot Fuzz. Same people did Shaun of the Dead.
Yep.
Oddly enough, I mean, Shaun of the Dead is closer to be like, because I don't even know if, in this one, it's the town is overrun by aliens or something like that. So I'm not even sure that the world ends in this, but they're going to the World's End Pub, which is a popular name for pubs in England, right? I mean, and, I don't know how popular, there's a ton of them, but
in the way that there's loads of pubs called the Dog and Duck.
Right. Which,
although Dog and Duck is now sort of just general terminology. When people joke about people playing when you're playing with your guys' team, you're playing soccer, it's the Dog and Duck, because it's the pub team type thing.
Yeah.
So World's End, yes, is another very popular pub name, even though pubs all over England, Britain, are closing.
I'm going to play what is...
Which would be the end of the world.
The best end of the world song. I've totally unintentionally have engineered this so that my favorites of each of them are at the very end.
Songs or movies? Because there's still one movie to come, isn't there?
Yeah, there's one more
movie. Yeah.
So, but the first, we're going to start with the favorite, the best song.
Okay. It's got to beat out The Clash. I've got Clash and London Calling sitting there. It's fended off REM, fended off themselves and Armageddon, fended off Morrissey, fended off The Stones. This one song can knock The Clash's London Calling from its perch as the greatest end-of-the-world song. Oh!
I mean, this is, not only is it a great song, but it's overtly end of the world. It's not subtle stuff.
We never allow ties in any of our comedy because it's the last man standing, not last dude standing. I was dreaming when I wrote this. Forgive me if it goes astray. But when I woke up this morning, could have sworn it was judgment day. Sky was all purple, there people running everywhere. So I take it you're voting for 1999 as the best ukulele song. Okay.
This is what I understand. All these colleges that have closed down.
Oh, they were playing this?
Well, I don't know if they play, but they should be. Yeah, I know they're partying like it was 1999. Like, what the heck?
Can I make a comment? I'm gonna put the boot into Georgetown University. When my stepdaughter moved in, they had all kinds of people helping you move them in and settle them down.
Yeah.
When we got notification this week that she had to move out because the semester was open, was ending, there is no one around to help you. Just one security dude telling you you can't park in front of the building. And I spend the whole time wheeling a big barrel up to the fourth floor myself, going, it wasn't like that when you came in. There were people falling over themselves to help you. Now there's no one to help you get out of the place.
I mean, you didn't have to empty it, did you?
Yep, completely.
Why?
Because the school year is over.
Oh.
They are not returning to campus like many universities so far, because no one across the U.S. has said they're coming back in. Jeez. But again,
done it temporary. Like, I know UVA's is like, okay, at least to mid-April, and we may or may.
No, more and more schools have then, they've called that, and then they've audible to the end of the, they're just audible to the end of the semester. Boston College end of the semester, Ivy League's end of the semester.
Very difficult to get people to fully move out.
That's what security were there for. They're not actually going to help you move out. They're just going to make sure that you move out.
Jeez, okay.
Very unhappy. All that money gets me no help to carry the boxes out. Although, to be fair, it's easier to go downstairs than go upstairs. So you're gonna go with 19. Look, you play this one and then...
Yeah, so the last movie, I'm going to say is the best movie.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's not the best movie. I don't know. This one, I'm just going to say, certainly more fun. And I had to use a green band trailer for this because the red band trailer is out of control.
We saw this in the cinema together.
Yeah. Team Frankel's having a giant party.
This place is beautiful, man.
This place is like a piece of me. You two just stepped inside me.
You let us both come inside you. Yeah.
Boom. Thanks, James Franco.
Have you seen Michael Cera tonight?
What's up, Rihanna?
Can't believe people still invite him places.
Don't touch my bubble, bitch.
It's a weird face.
So, like, the Red Band trailer is the exact same clips, and I was amazed at how they were able to cut it in certain ways so it had all the curses.
Oh, did they cut it? They didn't just do the TV version.
Like, so you'll hear a part where he says, what the...
Hey, they're not doing, what the flipping heck are you doing?
Right there. Yeah. So this is a comedy where... I don't think a lot of people have seen this, but if you want to have some entertainment, Seth Rogen, James Franco, Michael Cera, the skinny guy, Jonah Hill,
Emma Watson,
the guy from Eastbound Down,
Channing Tatum, nearly all playing themselves.
Yeah, like
apparently, versions
of themselves.
So this is the world.
This one's supernatural because like you have like a demon who possesses everybody, and then people are getting raptured up, and it's like they had to like. I think Seth Rogen and his buddy are trying to do something good.
That's a movie I'd forgotten about.
Something good so that they'll get raptured up because otherwise they're going to get left behind on Earth.
This one, is this the end of the world?
Yeah.
The other one is the world's end.
This is the end.
This is the
movie is called
This Is The End.
This Is The End.
Yes. So this is the end and the world's end. So the world's end was basically all these British comedians doing their thing, and then this is the end is all the American comedians doing their thing. And for some reason, in that sort of Hollywood karma way, one was released at the beginning of the summer and one was released at the end of the summer. And to be fair, neither one of them did that well. And yet when you watch them now, both those movies are very funny in their own way.
Yeah, no, they're totally different.
They bookended the summer, but the different types of funny, but they're both great. And you look at each set's, you look at both casts, and you think these movies should have done better. I mean, again, we've just listed a roll call of names that are in that movie.
Yeah.
This is as funny a movie as Pineapple Express, as funny a movie as 21 Jump Street.
Women-wise, Rihanna, Mindy Kaling, a bunch of others.
It's great. And to be fair, the Simon Pegg, you know, gang from Hot Fuzz and Some People, a different sort of comedy, that's a great movie too, and yet neither one of them did very well.
So I'm going to recommend, listen, when you're getting down, maybe you don't want to watch some of the darker apocalyptic movies, but maybe you want to watch these two and listen to 1999. I don't recommend listening to Morrissey if you're feeling down and cooped up in your house.
Oh, God, no. Morrissey will slit your wrist when that's done. Morrissey is what you listen to. You know something? You watch it on the beach and then make a cup of tea listening to Morrissey.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go to bed thinking this is all going to end badly and I should get ready.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, gosh. That... It's the 19 you have thrown at me, 1999.
I like the fact that you didn't even anticipate that one.
I didn't.
It's just all a fastball London right calling. By you.
Yeah, and it's hard to pick a winner, and I don't want to suddenly set the precedent for, you can have two kings of the ring. You can't. So, I don't know. I think the computer's just going to go off or something because I'm not going to pick. But I will say this. Here's the thing about – no. London Calling is the greater eucalyptic song because 1999, you're dancing and you're happy because it's Prince. Great song. It's just not. I'm sorry. The end of the world isn't going to be a good time. So I'm making my case. I'm making my case. You're going to go the other way.
It's a better song. I certainly feel happier ending on it.
Two great songs, though.
Yeah.
Two great songs. The End of the World, I'm going to say this. We've gone back through all these movies. And here's the thing about all these movies and disaster movies in general. They all end up... On the Beach is a good movie. Children of Men, which I hadn't expected to put in there, is a great movie.
I didn't even put in Rogue One. Rogue of the One is the end of the world. It's just not this world.
Yeah, that's true. That's
the
true.
End of that one is really like, all the characters are dead.
28 Days Later, maybe. The rest of them are not that great. Day After Tomorrow is awful. 2012 is hokey, and it's kind of good fun, but when it's finished, you're not going, oh, I need to watch that again.
Yeah.
The Deep Impact? Well, Deep Impact got beat that year by Armageddon.
Yeah,
so even within that year. So, yeah, no, The End of the World, an area that should be rich in entertainment value, has just not been done properly.
Well,
it really has.
Taking a lot of tries. I think the problem is it's too diffuse, you know.
Well, you could go anywhere. And ultimately, whatever decision you make isn't going to be a good one. And that's why, in a strange way, movies set at the end of the world tend to be the better movies because they're telling their story and using that sort of foreboding sense as a backdrop. But movies about the end. Like, here's the thing. If you do a movie about the end of the world, either the world is saved, in which case you've just been wasting your time for 2 hours, or you actually end the world. And that's a serious bummer. And who wants to sit through that for 2.5 hours?
Right. Well, all right. Should we wrap this up, and I can put the towel in the washing machine?
Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to keep my painter's masks for when I actually have time to do painting.
In all seriousness, everybody, be smart. Take care of yourself. Try not to expose your older relatives to things.
That's right.
And wash your hands all the time.
And to be fair, I do not expect...
Don't hoard toilet paper, please. Yeah.
And while coronavirus might wipe us all out, I can guarantee it's not going to do it within the next 2 weeks, which means we'll still be podcasting.
Right.
So there'll be more pods to look forward to.
Virtually. So, but yeah, and you know what else? If you're bored and you're stuck at home, we have a back catalog of, what are we at now? Eight years?
If you go to the stream,
the eighth year.
I'd forgotten the other week that I'd not added 2019 shows to the stream. When I now go in the stream, it's amazing. We have 8 years on an average of, 25 hours a year, 200. Turn on our stream. If you don't want to pick a show, you can just have us with you while you're stuck at home helping your work, and you will not heat up. You won't hear us repeat ourselves.
Unless you listen for 24.
In which you'll hear us repeat ourselves a lot, but you won't hear the same show.
Okay.
Well, you mean you might do. You'd be very unlucky if the computer program picks out one when it has...
Odds are against. Odds are higher that you get coronavirus than you'll get a new show. I don't know. We got
to... No, then you'll get a rerun. Right. This is a new show. You're getting a new... And you're going to get another show in two weeks. Even if one of us is locked up in isolation, we will join by Skype.
Yeah.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.